George Boulanger from Harlequin. They are coming to town, playing Rock the District this weekend. Dante, and welcome to 89.3 The Raven, George.
Well, thanks for having me, Bill. It's a thrill.
Yeah, so.
A pleasure.
Yeah, you guys are coming to town, coming to Edmonton, playing the Rock the District down at our brand new arena in our brand new district. You guys excited to come to Edmonton?
Absolutely. I can't think of a better place to be, really, because I really have a fondness for Edmonton. I have great memories of the place. I've always had a great time there, and we have a lot of fans so that hail from there, and I'm hoping to see them all. They better show up.
Yeah, exactly. And I've asked this of everybody, from Burton Cummings to Kim Mitchell, to anybody who's, you know, played Edmonton numerous times for these Canadian bands. Any standout memories for you of Edmonton that you can share on air?
Well, there was one time, and I won't mention where it was or how it happened, you know, but I was doing a gig there, and everything was going well. The crowd was going crazy, and there was this guy dancing in front of me, and he was getting a little boisterous and really getting into it, and I thought, well, you know, this guy's really enjoying himself. And all of a sudden, the guy leaps up onto the stage, and he grabs my microphone. So I've had this happen before, where guys have jumped on a stage, and it didn't end well for me, because the first time it happened, the guy sucker punched me and got me in the gut, and I lost my wind and I dropped to the ground, and it was ugly, you know. So I thought I would, you know, grab the bull by the horns, and I just kind of kicked him off the stage. And the guy kind of, you know, he fell, but he ended upright, and he gave me the dirtiest look. And then my bass player came up to me, you know, the song's still playing. He said, "Hey, George," I said, "What?" He says, "Don't you know who that is?" I said, "No. Have you ever seen Guns N' Roses?" So there he was, wanted to sing a song with me, and I had no idea who the guy was, right? Because they were just coming up, and they were a big band, but, you know, I'd never seen that many pictures of them, and I didn't know. I kicked him off the stage. So that's one memory I'll never live down, because all the guys were just flabbergasted. What did you do that for? But it was just self-defense, really, in my.
Yeah, you didn't know who it was, and had you known it was Axl Rose, right? But now, that is a hilarious memory to think back on, kicking Axl Rose off the stage, right?
Yeah.
Awesome. Now, you know, you've helped pen so many awesome hits that have become Canadian rock staples. Thinking of You, Superstitious Feeling, songs like that. Did you ever think that, when you were writing those, you know, in the early 80s, and you guys were coming up with those songs, did you ever think that they would become, you know, Canadian classic rock staples in radio still some 40 years later?
Well, you know, you don't really actually think that, but you always hope that something happens, right? You know, as a matter of fact, with the first album, I tell the story a lot, but when we were taken over by Sony, which was at the time Epic, by default, because we had signed with a fellow who owned a recording studio, he owned a pressing plant and a record label, and we'd been knocking on doors in Toronto for quite a while. And he said to us, "Boys, I got a deal for you. Here's how it's going to work." And he scribbled something on a piece of paper. He turned it around. And I'd had recording deals with other bands before. And, you know, the industry was just polluted with sharks. But I won't get into it. You know, you don't get anything. So anyways, I turned around. He put it on the table. He turned around and faced me. I looked down and said, "I get everything." And I said, "Well, at least you're an honest guy." A lot of them hide it in 40-page contracts, right? So we never thought that, you know, we would get anything of it. But what happened with that one is we started recording, and we were taking some time off, because we'd been there for about a couple of weeks, put some tracks down. And the receivers came and shut them down, and CBS ended up owning us. Anyways, long story short, we get a call from CBS at one point. It said, "Now you are our chattel. You know, we own this thing, but, you know, we don't hear a single." So I said, "Well, what are you looking for?" And they said, "Well, we're looking for something, bouncy with a positive message, blah, blah, blah." So I went in the other room and I wrote most of the song, Survive, because it was bouncy, positive message.
Yeah, yeah.
And I had to retain from, you know, I was in another band. I had written part of this song in another band. I got together with Glenn, and he came up with like a chorus, and we just threw it together. But it was just thrown together in like 20 minutes, and it ends up being the first single on the album. And in the meantime, they'd bought this other song from for us to do. And ironically, it was a ballad, and it never got any airplay. But there you go. The first single was Survive, and it was just happened by fluke.
Yeah, that's how they happen. Some of the best ones, you know. So talking about songwriting, like, do some of these melodies and lyric ideas and even, you know, song concepts, do they just come to you at random times? Or, like, is it something that you sit down and focus on?
Well, you know, you take inspiration from anywhere you can get it, and I'm sure everybody feels the same way. You know, I've heard stories about, you know, Sting, he'd hear like an air conditioner going, whatever, and he'd start a beat, and then he'd put a bass part to it, and then he sang a lyric. But, you know, for me, it comes from anything. You know, I can hear somebody say something, or I see something written down, like, oh, that'd be a great title for a song, or if I have something I want to express, I may put it in words first, and then add a melody, and then a chord pattern, or sometimes it's a chord pattern, then you add a, you know, a beat, and then a melody. That it's never the same way twice. You know, it just comes from anywhere, and that's, you have to be open, I think, as an artist to just about anything, right? So that's where inspiration comes from, just about anywhere.
Fair enough. And, you know, like, you've been writing and recording and performing for how many years now? And, you know, you've obviously written and alongside Tom Cochrane and performed alongside so many of Canada's greats. And, of course, you know, we just lost a great with that being Gordon Lightfoot. What are some of the highlights of your personal career of meeting other Canadian rock icons?
Well, you know, it's always a thrill to meet someone, you know, I'd be kind of hoity-toity, I mean, to say peers, but a lot of them I consider that are a lot more elevated than I am. But it's always a thrill. You meet these guys, and sometimes it's a wonderful experience, and sometimes not so much. But, you know, I kind of understand that, too. Sometimes you catch a guy on a bad day. Everybody has bad days, and they may, you know... I remember meeting Brian Adams, and he was warming us up in Ottawa, and he was looking down and out. And I had a cousin who knew Brian Adams. She called me and said, "Hey, I hear you're playing with Brian Adams. Can you say hello for me?" His mother and I, like speaking of herself, used to share the same babysitter, and Brian was sometimes at my house with the other babysitter, and I've got to know him pretty well. I think his father was a diplomat or something like that. And anyways, she said, "Can you say hi to him for me?" So I went to that where I was in the, you know, the craft services, you know, you got to eat. We're at the playing the arena in Ottawa. Mm-hmm. And I walked up to his table. He was sitting there with a girl. He looked down and out, you know. I said, "Hey, Brian, I just want to give you a hello from a," I mentioned my cousin's name, and I said, she wanted me to say hi to you. And well, isn't that nice? Blah, blah, blah. I said, you know, we had a little chat, and he said, he was kind of, he wasn't feeling all that great. You know, he said he was kind of disheartened by the whole business, and he felt like, you know, he's not going to ever make any money at this. I looked at him and I said, "Brian, I'll tell you this right now." I said, "You know, I may not write great songs, but I know a great song when I hear it. And you've written quite a few already." I said, "If you aren't a millionaire by the end of this year, I'd fire my manager, my record company, and anybody involved with your operation, because you've got whatever it is, you've got it." And he looked at me and he went, "Are you really?" I said, "Really?"
Well, and then Reckless drops, right?
Yeah.
So you guys are you're coming to town June 16th to 18th. Rock the District. It's 3 days featuring a slew of Canadian bands. Have you seen the entire lineup for the weekend?
I think I have, but to be honest, I haven't looked at it lately, and I can't remember because a lot of times we play a lot. You know, you meet all these guys on the road all the time, so you know it gets kind of confusing. You don't quite recall all the all of the events that you know perfectly.
Well, you're playing on the same night as Loverboy and Helix and Carol Pope and Rough Trade. Then on Friday, they got Glass Tiger, Prism, Toronto. Sunday, April Wine, Street Heart, Saga. It's going to be a good time. Anything special planned?
Oh, my God. Where do I get a ticket?
Yeah, exactly. I might see you in the audience on Sunday. Other than that, you know, post-pandemic, things are pretty much opened up now. What is basically, you know, what's Harlequin up to these days? You know, is there any new music coming out? What can we expect from Harlequin in the next, say, a year?
Well, we're going definitely coast to coast, and we're still writing songs and doing stuff. However, we have nothing slated to record right now, but you know, there certainly is a lot of stuff. So I've been playing, writing songs with my old bandmate Glenn Willows, who I wrote most of the Harlequin stuff with. He hasn't been in the band for quite some time, but he's living on the West Coast, and he's getting a little antsy, and we've been doing some writing as well. So, hey, you never know.
Yeah, you never know. Once again, speaking with George from Harlequin, thanks for taking the time to chat with our listeners today, George, and we can't wait to see you at the Rock the District Festival.
Well, thanks, Bill. Pleasure speaking to you, and I hope to see all the Harlequin fans out there, and